Secret Output, a very special gear shootout episode. I'm Jeff Sanoff.
And I'm Eli Janney.
And today we're going to blow your minds with the incredible precision test that we did comparing the Universal Audio Apollo against the real McCoy.
Can a $2,500 interface, well, $3,000 with the plugins,
yeah,
compare to a, I don't know, $260,000 worth of gear? You be the judge.
Today, we'll find out. Okay, not really.
Basically, what we were setting out to do is answer this question. We had gotten a Universal Apollo, and I was wondering just how close it was to the real thing. You know, let's get into a real studio with real mics. And unfortunately, we didn't have a real drummer, but I played drums. And just to see how close it was using the Universal Apollo plugins on the input, as it's set up to do, and how that's actually going to compare to using a real Studer tape machine and a real Neve. So
the point is, basically, this isn't a full-fledged shootout. Just keep in mind, out of the gate, what we were working with was Universal Audio Apollo using their Neve 31102 mic pre-EQ plugin and their Studer 800 plugin, and comparing that to the Stratosphere Sound Neve, which is an 8068 with the same mic pre-EQ, the 31102, but the Stratosphere Neve was recapped in 1999 with Electrolytics. So out of the gate, you're talking about a slightly modified mic pre against a software model, which I don't even know which iteration of the 31102 and if they modeled the transformer or what. We don't know exactly.
Well, we also know that they say numerous times, we're not trying to model this mic pre. We're just modeling the EQ and the output of.
So, but we put the mic pre on there because it's, you know, it should theoretically color the sound a little bit. But we weren't using any EQ. We were just have everything was flat that we recorded. There was no equalization.
Yeah, no EQ.
And then the tape machine is a Studer 827 using the RMG formulation of 900 tape. And we're using the Universal Audio Studer A800 emulation using their modeling of the 900 tape at 15 IPS plus 6. Yeah. So that's the basic comparison.
Yeah, even the setup isn't exactly
right. Yeah, it's
right.
not exactly right.
But I was just very curious as to, like, how does the Apollo react when you feed it quality signals? We had the drum set mic'd up with
two Coles overheads. We just used a Beta 52 on the inside of the kick drum, and then a SM57 on the top of the snare. So four mics, not super complicated. And then we had the stuff we did on piano was two U87 AIs. So set the Neve, the real mic pre levels, while Eli played. So we had baseline levels for what were safe recording levels to tape. Then I took a tone and went into the mic pre and then compared going into the mic pre of the Neve 8068 with going into the Apollo mic pre so that the output levels were.
Now, how do we split it?
That one, we actually used mults on the patch bay. So the Coles at 57 and the Beta 52 were all going to two different mic pre's. Now, obviously that introduces loading. It's not ideal, but it's sort of the only way to compare the same performance. So, yeah.
And that was more important to us.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know that that's going to make a difference. The first test we did, we actually kept the tape machine on and compared the level coming out of the tape machine with the level coming out of the Apollo chain with the Neve 31102 software and then going into the Studer. The differences between that, which we can play you, are pretty big. Not like one is better than the other, but just like they don't sound the same at all.
Right. Basically, the Apollo's got four mic pre's on it. And these mic pre's are very neutral. They're very clean. They're not like trying to be anything. They're just like a very regular solid state design. Very high quality, but it's a very neutral design. And going from that into the Neve EQ emulator, into the Studer 800 emulator, and out again. And then
with theoretically the same calibrations. You know.
Right. But just calling up the presets, not messing around with it. And let's play some clips
here. Okay, so first thing you're going to hear, this is the Neve going into the Studer 827. This is the real-world hardware.
Okay.
Now we're going to play you the Apollo. So this is going into the Apollo through the software.
Just the software version, but not tweaked out at all. We just like called up the presets. The only thing that adjusted was the level.
Yeah, so the level going through the mic pres and through the tape machine are adjusted to be basically the same.
Roll the tape.
So the first thing that stands out to me, I think, just out of the gate, is that on the real deal, there's a hell of a lot more noise. Like, you just hear the tape hiss. Yeah. This was the first thing I ever noticed when I even tried the software, was their setting for tape hiss is much lower than any machine I've ever recorded on at 15 IPS.
Yeah. It's generous to say. And it also made it impossible, as you heard, to compare them directly, because you could easily... When you switch back and forth, you could hear the hiss right away, and you know, oh, well, that's the tape machine, obviously. So in your mind, you just know that's the tape machine. It made it very difficult to actually compare.
The other thing I would say is that you can tell that the alignments are pretty different, too, because the Stratosphere hardware sounds much brighter, and the software world is darker, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say? I mean, there's just a real tonal difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's got us to thinking, oh, I wonder how... much the converters are different, just without, you know, using any of this stuff.
So, well, actually, our next step was we wanted to see, okay, let's break this down. So we see that if we just kind of throw the stock versions of each of these things up, it doesn't really sound the same. And you know, that's fine. That's to be expected. I don't expect them to be identical, especially when you're talking about a tape machine that was calibrated by... you know, by hand, and a software emulation that was calibrated with somebody's idea of what a perfect... calibration would be for that tape formulation.
Right, different tape machines, you know, different eras of Neves, I'm sure.
So, the next thing that we did was try and isolate one variable. So, we got rid of the Neve software emulation, and we just molted the outputs of the Neve, the Stratosphere at 8068 mic pres.
The 31102.
Yes. So, this next clip is a comparison between the 31102s... going through their Studer emulation versus the 31102s going through a real Studer 827.
Right. Different tape machine still.
So here's the hardware. And now, here is the software version.
And again, just to reiterate, this is not going through the mic pres on the Apollo. This is going into their line-ins.
Right. Okay. Now, when you listen to this, again, this is what got us really being like, wow, the noise is just so much different.
Yeah, you can just tell immediately what it is.
So you can't even really say blind, because yeah, all you no have blind. To do is listen to how much noise it is. So at this point, we realized, okay, there really is a big difference in how these two things are calibrated. So let's do an experiment to see in 20 minutes, yeah. give or take, how close can I get by ear, just tweaking the Studer 800 plugin, how close can yeah. I get to what I'm hearing coming off
the
tape?
And that is one of the cool things about the plugin that some of the other emulations don't have, is that you can flip open the top and it gives you full access to the biasing, the high frequency.
It gives you all the alignment parameters. You've yeah. got the record EQ for the high frequency. It gives you the bias. It gives you the low frequency reproduction and the high frequency repro.
And it has a hiss knob.
Yep, it has a hiss and a wow and flutter. So,
which is kind of cool, which is exactly what we needed. So we went back in and adjusted those parameters to get them as close as possible.
Within a, you know, I wasn't like, and wasn't like perfect, but because you can still tell the difference. But if you mess with the bias, maybe turn it down a little bit from their preset. The Stratosphere 827 was a little under bias,
yeah.
which tends to give you a slightly brighter sound. And this is the thing about real world hardware. You make very small changes on a bias, especially with a tape like 900, and you really can hear it, the tonal shift very quickly. And that's important to keep in mind, because when you're trying to do an experiment like this, it doesn't take much to actually introduce a pretty large change.
Yeah.
It's analog.
Real world. It's analog.
So I under-biased it a little bit more on the software. Then I added a bit of high-frequency EQ to the record circuit that they've modeled. Then I took off a little bit of the low-frequency EQ on their playback circuit. And I added just a little bit more on the high-frequency EQ on the playback circuit. So I made some changes. You know, it wasn't massive, but first, we'll play you the recording through the real hardware. So this is, again, Neve Mike Pries going through the real-world tape machine. And now, here's the same few bars of Eli playing drums. Real world
night. You mean rocking it.
Yeah, rocking it, kicking ass, taking names. But this time through the software emulation of the tape machine after I have adjusted it.
But this same is just, exactly. just a closer matched tape.
Sorry. And also, the other thing is I added a lot of noise to the.
You had to.
Otherwise, it was just not going to fly. We'll post these clips online, so if you're curious, you can download them and listen to them yourselves and figure out how great a drummer Eli is.
I'm available for hire.
And no, we didn't beat Detective. I mean, the thing that stood out to me once we kind of got the alignment of the tape machines was that there is a difference. And yeah, you know, maybe I preferred one to the other, but the difference wasn't, I don't know, if I owned $150,000 worth of gear, I would be like,
it's pretty crazy.
How much longer is it going to be until this is completely?
Yeah. Well, should we play some phase cancellation?
Well, the phase cancellation is interesting because all you hear is a tape going, which is because of the tape machine.
The flutter is at different frequencies.
The wow and flutter speed. That exists on the hardware that we did not try and emulate on the software, because it's kind of hard to hear that stuff. Because it's not going to be the same, because that's the whole point of wow and flutters, is like random speeding and slowing down. Here's something to consider if you're not someone who's experienced using a real tape machine. When you're learning to use a tape machine, the first thing anyone tells you is don't print anything that's really important on the edge tracks, which is why time code gets printed on the edge track. And usually, at least the way I was taught, you know, you'd print either like hi-hat or bottom snare on track one. Some people would put kick just because it's sort of logical.
Right.
As a general rule, the edge tracks are the ones that are, they're most likely to get physically damaged. Yeah. And they're also more subject to the wow and flutter if there is an issue.
Yeah, they degrade most quickly.
The other thing, which is more evident on some tape machines than on others, when you're doing a comp and you're patching on tape from one track to the next, some machines you can't record from, say, track 17 to track 18 because you're going to have a feedback problem because of the way the tape machine... because of the crosstalk is sufficiently high that you're going to actually feed back. Mm-hmm. On other machines, you can't go from 17 to 19 because the head stacks are such that the odd ones are next to each other and the even ones are next to each other. It depends on the model. I think the Otari's sequential and the Studer's are odds and evens. Point is, those are real-world pain in the asses. And they're not things that you even think about until you start considering, well, how close is this emulation?
Well, and synchronization, too. It, when you're working with time code that's fluctuating because it's on tape is a nightmare. You know, Bob Power talked about this. We talked about trying to synchronize stuff. And, you know, Kevin Killen, finally, he hated it so much trying to synchronize two 24 tracks that he, as soon as he could, he went to a 32-track digital.
There you go. Real-world headaches about tape machines. However, we still like the way they sound, and we like the tape emulations as well. The next experiment was keeping the mic pres multed and just trying to compare the two converters. What differences do we get?
Right. And these were 192, Digi 192s, not the brand new ones.
No, it
right?
wasn't the brand new HDIO. It was the 192s that were clocked just in loop sync, so nothing fancy. No Apogee, no Antelope, no, you know.
Right.
And the UA, similar, just internal clock, no fancy external clocking, and not also clocked to the 192. So totally separate systems. So first, we're going to play drums going right into the 192 out of the Neve mic pres.
And now we're going to listen to...
So Neve mic pres into the Apollo. The line inputs again, just to hear what the difference in converters are like. Can you hear a difference there? I mean,
you know,
I kind of, when I'm switching back and forth
between
them, when
you're switching back and forth,
you can hear it.
It's pretty subtle, and it also gets down to that thing where it's kind of like, you sent me an email that was pretty apt, where it's like, it's not apples and oranges, it's like Macintosh versus Red Delicious. They're definitely in the same ballpark, and they're very similar.
One thing I sort of associate with better converters is stereo field and just high frequency clarity, and I didn't feel like one all of a sudden... you know, went dramatically off the rails. They're a little different. We also did the same test with piano, so we'll play you that now. This is Eli playing piano. The first thing is going to be Neve mic pre going into the 192.
Thank you.
And now we'll play you the Neve mic pre going into the line inputs of the Apollo.
Man, that's good piano playing.
Man, that guy.
Who is that?
I don't know, man.
That's like a year and a half of piano lessons right there. I mean, I study.
And 12 years in a rock
band. Yeah, which obviously paid off. Anyway, again, really similar. This, I think, was closer. I think that the drums have a little more difference. But I thought the piano, going back and forth, the piano was like, why? I don't know.
And I would just like to point out, too, because this wasn't a terribly scientific test, that when you phase cancel the two, it's a little bit less phase cancellation than you might expect in some ways. And I just can't possibly believe that the converter differences are so extreme that you would get the phase cancellation results that we got. They cancel pretty well, but they're not like totally, totally canceling. And, you know, it could be the converters are different, but I wonder if they also, the line inputs are on one, maybe like the loading, because what we did was we had the mic pre-molted outputs to two things. So I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to go onto the site and grab those files and A/B them in your home DAW.
And make sure you do it on your iPhone or your laptop so you really get the sense of like sonic clarity and full frequency
quality.
Response.
No, if you whatever you're used to listening to, I have to say those two to me, it's really close. I don't know why that would work, though. This is the mystery. Maybe someone can solve for us.
And we'll play the same test now with piano. So this will be Eli's awesome piano playing, going through Stratosphere's 8068 Neve into the Avid 192. And now, same performance.
Stellar.
Going into the Apollo with the Neve 31-102 mic pre-emulation, but no EQ engaged at all. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Is there a difference?
You can hear a slight, subtle difference, but this, to me, is even closer, where it's just like, who cares? You know?
I mean, if it was a solo acoustic piano with a vocalist and just totally naked, maybe you might have an opinion about which one you liked better. And I'm not even going to say which one it is that I preferred, because I don't really know. What I hear is that piano, and if that piano is the right piano for the track, then it works. But
yeah.
You put some guitars on that, man. You're not going to know.
No. So, should we go to our conclusions?
Yes.
Our opinions. Well, basically, in some, if not most of the cases, I probably prefer the real tape and real desk machine, because it's just a slight bit more presence. It's the only way I can say it. It's like a very complicated difference. It's not like, oh, this one's brighter and this one's duller. And this, you know, it's not like a blanket statement like that.
No, and that reminds me of one of the things when we did the mic pre-test, right? Just comparing the software mic pre to the hardware mic pre, is that when you phase invert them, what you notice is that the peaks, the saturation curves are obviously different because when you hit the drums harder or the piano harder, you know,
the phase changes. The cancellation
and
changes.
That just tells you that probably they didn't model some parts of that circuit.
Yeah.
At some point, they probably, well, they certainly could do it, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe they will.
I feel like that deficit of presence I find on a lot of stuff that I get to mix. And it doesn't matter if it's recorded in a studio to a tape machine or recorded all digitally. I always end up bringing out more of the snares or the high end of the vocals or, you know, just trying to get clarity.
Oh, that's not just because you're deaf?
Yeah. Or it could be that too. But the low end of the Apollo, I kind of liked better in a lot of instances. So I don't know. But I think more importantly, what you were getting at with the emulations getting better and better, it's like, we're also talking about just like a ridiculous comparison where you click on a mouse to change your tape formulation. Like, how long would it take you to reset up the tape machine?
I mean, even just changing the speed, it's like going from 15 to 30, you're talking about, you know, a whole nother alignment.
Yeah.
Which is,
you're just not going to do.
Whatever, 35 minutes, an hour, depending on how.
Yeah,
you know,
I can
do 20, depending on
that's me though.
How fast you are. Yeah, you can do it. No, you're like the alignment superhero.
That's close enough.
They ought to have a Super Eli able to align a tape machine in 20 minutes. We'll get into your point about the top end on the tape machine. One thing to remember is that you listen to any song you ever tracked on a tape machine. The first time you listen to it, it sounds different than the last time you mixed it. Because, I mean, and I'm just talking about the number of times you play that song over the heads.
Absolutely.
The oxide wears off a little bit. The energy levels sort of start to saturate and they kind of stay more. It gets darker over time. It just, that's a fact. And you can.
Well, that's how we used to make mixes on the two tracks to do the vocal takes in order to not wear out the original. You know, reel. That's what we used to do.
Yeah, on a slave reel, right? So, the other thing is you would intentionally print, like I would intentionally EQ to tape brighter than I thought it should be because I knew that it would just start to get darker over time. So, I mean,
things,
you know, not,
people don't even think about these days.
No, it's nice that you don't have to do that. But it's also a something to keep in the back of your head when you're trying to do a comparison like this is.
Right. And also the important thing that I think most people are thinking about, this Apollo, now it's got these plugins on the inputs, which is just an amazing, and I think a lot of manufacturers are going to follow suit with this, honestly. Exactly. Having these emulations on the input so that you can commit to it is really cool. And also being able to record using a tape emulation before you even get into Pro Tools is really, really awesome, because you can use that tape emulation during your production. You can hear how it's having an effect instead of waiting until you get into the mix and be like, oh, you know, I'm going to try putting this tape thing on. Well, it doesn't really sound like how it did when we tracked it.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
Right. Like, you make your decisions based on what's in front of you. And so I guess the nice thing about a real tape machine is, you know, you recorded that and then whether or not you stay on tape or not, you're committing to that sound.
Yep.
And sometimes in plug-in land, it's nice to have the flexibility later on in the process. But a lot of times, it's just too many options. And it's one less thing, either because you're being more efficient in using your processing resources, because, you know, there are limitations to that as well. But also, maybe it's just like, this is the sound we're going for.
Yeah.
We're going to commit.
Well, I think it's also reality that you're using your tape machine as an effect anyway. I mean, really.
In 2012, I would say.
That's everybody I know. If you're going to record on a tape.
Eli, Jack White, not doing that for effect. He's doing that for.
No, but I mean, you know, you the big Sleep record that just came out. It's like we recorded it onto tape. And then when we got a take we like, we dumped it into Pro Tools. So we were getting that tape sound. And then that was it. Then we moved back onto Pro Tools. I also thought it was interesting how the two Neves compared. That I wasn't expecting.
That to me was the most surprising thing out of the whole process, was the fact that comparison was pretty damn close.
Okay. So, Jeff, what did you think about the tape emulation test?
I think, in the immortal words of Donald Rumsfeld, You go to war with the army you have, not the one you might wish you had.
That guy.
Making an excuse for his own failed foreign policy. Well, anyway, point being that if I got to record with an Apollo, I'm not going to be crying about it because I think it sounds great. I really do. I think it gives you a level of flexibility that's pretty remarkable for the price point. And yeah, you know, if I can use the real deal, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. But
yeah, well, I think the interesting, you know, we talked about towards the end, we're like, okay, well, say you were setting up a studio.
But I might not. And here's why.
Yes.
I can think of situations where I would rather use the Apollo, even if I had a Neve 8068 and a Studer tape machine. And
really?
Yeah, I can. And here's one. You're doing vocals for an artist where you're like, know that they're fussy and that they're going to want to come back and fix things later on. And you don't know whether you have the budget or the time to get back into the studio.
Yeah.
So that's the true. Apollo is like so close in many ways and gives you the flexibility of saving your settings and doing it anywhere. So
yeah, that's true. And also,
assuming you want to rent a U47.
Which, if you want to move quickly.
Yeah.
Is that all you have to say, Jeff? Good God.
Thank you so much for letting me talk, Eli, because I know you haven't heard my voice enough today.
Anyway, if you have questions or comments about this test, which I'm sure you will, you can send us an email at inputoutputpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, inputoutputpodcast, @inputoutputpodcast. I think that's what it is. We want to definitely thank Stratosphere for letting us hog the studio all day.
Yes,
very
that was
graciously.
Very, very kind of them.
And that is at www.stratospheresound.com. Great studio with a great Neve and Studer. And we also want to thank our producer, Justin Coletti. Input Output Podcast is produced in association with sonicscoop.com.
Thank you for listening.
Booty, beady, booty, de booty, de booty, de booty, de booty, de booty, de booty.
Input, output. Input, output.
We should, you know, we should do like a fucking funk ass version.
Yeah,
of
do
it.
A remix of that. get Greg
input out. That'd be terrible.